And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we have a great show for you this evening. We have Erica Lukes coming up. She's going to talk about if there's anything new or maybe just what happened at the Skinwalker Ranch. We're going to be talking about that in her home state. And we have Alejandro Rojas coming up with the news in just a minute. I did want to tell the listeners out there that we do have a new blog writer. His name, now I'm probably going to not do a good job with this, is Giridhar Shenoy. He's from India, wrote a great blog, and is all excited to write several more. This one that he wrote is just posted, and it's the Kelly Hopkinsville Encounter of the Goblin Kind. That's how he added the title to that. So a lot of good feedback on that. So I hope you check it out. Thanks so much for supporting the show if you are, and if you're not, you can for only $2 or more a month. All that information is on our website, podcastufo.com. We are running on YouTube live streaming, if you care to watch that, every Wednesday evening at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our full show is free always on the Dark Matter Digital Network, and that's on Thursdays at 10 to midnight, again, Eastern Standard Time. And the Everything Else show, we did a great one last week that will be posted soon with a soul survivor on a life raft, Stephen Callahan, very nice. Next Monday, we have Michael Griesbach. He was a prosecutor for the Stephen Avery case. If anyone watched Making a Murderer, that's going to be pretty interesting next week. So that's it for me, Alejandro. What's going on? How are you?
I am doing all right. I still surprisingly have not recovered from my illness. So I still got a cough. I'll try not to cough on air for you, and some sniffles.
Oh, man.
So I'll try not to make any disgusting, sick-like noises.
Okay, well, good to have you back. You were missed last week.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes. Jordan Bonaparte filled in for the news, but there were still some sniffles. There were people out there that missed you, so...
Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry, people. I'm back. I'm back, peep. So, you know, buck up. And I hope you feel better. We'll give each other some virtual hugs. Let's do a little virtual hug here. There you go. There you go. I'm patting your back.
I get in on that one.
We virtually hug. Yeah. Okay. Yep. You're in here too. Oh, yep. You're careful with the hands there. okay. So hopefully that makes everybody feel better. But yeah.
So what's...
So I am back.
Mm-hmm. And I know you're a busy guy today. Is there anything exciting happening?
There are some exciting things. So just a couple things I'll touch on that are in the headlines. And I think, you know, because there are often things in the headlines that I either don't get around to writing about these days, or because I'm getting spread a little thin, or maybe they're interesting, but not to the level of getting their own story on our site. So I'll talk a couple about those things. And then we do have some interesting reports from Roger Marsh again from MUFON. So the couple of tidbits out there. Now, NASA is going to reveal something about oceans, extraterrestrial oceans, essentially. There's a couple moons out there in particular that have oceans. Nobody's quite sure exactly, I guess, what they're going to be talking about. Probably about Saturn's moons or something like that. But I will warn you, it's going to be at 2 p.m., 11 a.m. Pacific time, which is where I am, on Thursday, April 13th. I'll warn you that a lot of the stories that you're reading out there about this come from the UK tabloids. Mm.
I did see that.
They're bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, of course, they're blowing it up out of proportion. And they just overly sensationalize everything. And it's very unfortunate. So be careful what you read out there. You know, the link I have is to TechCrunch. And they say it's probably not going to be anything related to extraterrestrials. But it ought to be interesting. And, of course, the Sun and these places are trying to make it out to be like, you know, aliens are going to attack us from the oceans of the moons of Saturn or something. But
now, didn't that happen about a year ago when they were ready to make an announcement that there was all this hubbub and ended up being, you know, just a minor announcement after all?
It's been happening over the last several years, especially the last two or three years. And it's mostly because now, really, a lot of their announcements are astrobiological in nature. So they're in regards to extraterrestrial life, which is exciting. But, you know, unfortunately, the media, especially some of these, you know, poor tabloids that over-sensationalize everything. And, you know, and NASA, I'm sure their scientists are really excited, and they sit down and they're like, we found a microbe in one case, in one of the first times this happened, we found a microbe in California that is in this lake, and it lived, like no other, you know, microbe can. So that means, you know, maybe there's even more life out there, or more possibilities for life than we had previously thought. That's probably exciting to them, but, you know, compared to what it was made out to be, that's really boring and lame. And so people were disappointed. So you have to take what these sensationalistic sites say with a grain of salt. So we'll see what it is. I'm sure I'm going to be excited about it either way. I was excited about the California thing that everybody got disappointed about, and all of them thus far, because they are interesting things. And certainly, you know, these moons in Saturn, like what are Enceladus and is one of them. They've got all these weird names, but that could possibly have life in these vast oceans. I mean, that's so extremely exciting.
It is. That would be. So
so there's that
11
story.
O'clock and that's Pacific time it's going to be on, right? Is that what you said?
Uh-huh. Right. 11 o'clock Pacific, Thursday. What is today?
Today is the 12th.
Today must be Wednesday, yes, right?
That's right.
Holy moly. Days keep flying by. I'm so mixed up. So that's tomorrow.
That's right.
For some reason, I was thinking today was Tuesday, but I didn't think it was weird that we were doing this interview on Tuesday, and I don't know what's going on with my brain. But anyway, here's another exciting one. An audiobook, an X-Files audiobook that is going to be read by David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson, who, of course, played the characters Fox Mulder and Agent Scully. So that's kind of exciting. That was a story on Nerdist. You can read more about all of these stories if you go to our daily UFO headlines, which we post every day. If they're not in today's headlines, it's always good to catch up. You can go to our articles and then go to daily UFO headlines, and you can just see a long, long list. It's great for research because you get a bunch of stuff about, you know, mainstream news, information about UFOs and stuff. So you can go there for that. So that's that. Otherwise, triangles. You know, Roger Marsh posts stories from MUFON for us on our website, and he does try to look for stuff that's visually has some sort of visual component, such as a artist rendering from the witnesses. So we did post a couple of those this week. In particular, today is a sighting from Wednesday, February 22nd. It was seen at 8:30 p.m. These people were at a stoplight when something caught their eyes. They glanced and they noticed a line of bright lights. They kept watching it, and they said these lights were in a triangular formation. They weren't blinking or anything. And the object, they said, moved a couple times, and then it was gone. So this person was trying to drive and look at it at the same time. This is still under investigation. Of course, it could be Chinese lanterns, but the witness did draw what he saw, and so he has a drawing of seven lights, one in the center, and then, you know, two kind of arms coming out of three lights each. So very, very symmetrical in nature. So another possible triangle. I don't know. Who knows?
And this one was in Pennsylvania, right?
Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, which is really cool, is from November 2015. This one's just exciting because of the drawings. This person drew a bunch of stuff. Now, this was more diamond-shaped, but this person said it was floating 200 feet above them, and they drew kind of themselves stopped and walking out in the road to look at this thing above them, and they did some really neat drawings to show just this oddly shaped object that this person had seen.
Now, this drawing looks like one of the drawings I remember in the flap back in 1989, the Belgium flap. Mm-hmm. It looks a little bit like it, one of the drawings from over there.
It does, yeah. You know, a lot of times in these triangular UFO flaps or when there's more, they're not always completely triangular. Mm-hmm. Even when it comes to the Phoenix Lights this week and next week, I'm doing all these interviews about the Phoenix Lights because there's a new movie coming out, Phoenix Forgotten.
Yeah.
And they've asked me to go talk to some of our local media about the Phoenix Lights to get them excited for the movie. So I said, sure, you know, help me promote what we do. And it's such an incredible sighting. But in that sighting, you know, there were a lot of different shapes that were reported.
That's
actually
right. Yes.
So some of them are very oddly shaped. Some of them are boxes. Some of them just aren't quite triangular, even though we're most familiar with the idea of the more larger triangle kind of chevron shape.
Yes, sir.
So very odd. And I think that gives credibility when the shape is kind of weird, you know?
I do too. This is probably a good time to announce this next week. We do have the director on the show from the Phoenix Forgotten movie. Barber is going to be on the show. All right. Well, Alejandro, is that it for this evening?
That is it for this evening.
Thank you so much, sir. And we will be talking to you next week.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon. Have a great show.
All right. Hang in, everyone. We'll be right back after this quick music break with Erica Lukes. Hello there, Erica. How are you?
I am just happy to be here. How are you?
Great. Always good to have you on. I think it was, I was in Russia last time you were on, so it was almost a year ago now.
I know. Time flies when you're having fun in the UFO
that's
world.
Right. no pun intended. It's flying, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm so sorry I missed you and everybody else out there in Phoenix. This February, and so I'm sure you had a great time out there without me, and yes.
Of course. You know, we did, even though we were very heartbroken.
Sobbing.
We were sad. Well, I was very sad I couldn't hang out with you. We had a great time, and they always do such an amazing job at UFO Congress.
Yes, always. I love going. I'm going to drive out next year, so I'm going to take some extra time off and just see the whole Southwest, which I like to do. So that'll be next year. So for the person who has not listened to you before when you were on my show, can you tell them your basically your background and what got you interested in UFOs? And then later on, we'll talk. We're going to be talking about the Skinwalker Ranch. It's a fascinating topic to speak about right in your home state there.
It is. I'm so lucky. Utah is the most amazing place. And so I've got lots to talk about with regard to Utah. But I have always been interested in, the paranormal and in UFOs. Since I was a little child, it was something that intrigued me. And in my early to late teens and 20s, I had some interesting paranormal experiences that were witnessed by everybody around me. And that was interesting. That kind of, just got me going and wanting to learn more about that field. And then in 2013, I had some sightings of the amber orbs over the Salt Lake Valley. And to me, it was so incredible, and I wasn't the only one seeing them, but I wanted to know what they were, because they were in the flight corridor for the Salt Lake International Airport. They were over a densely populated, the most populated city in Utah, and they were 80 miles away from one of the most frightening places on Earth, which is Dugway Proving Ground. So I got, I decided I was going to investigate on my own, and I called Hiller Force Base. Of course, they were so helpful.
I'm sure.
I called Dugway Proving Ground, the FAA, but I was making the rounds, and I guess I put myself on the map back then, but I really wanted to learn about it. And I called New Fork, and Peter Davenport was great, and it told me about the orange amber orbs. And he'd been having a lot of different sightings all over the country with regards to those. And I wanted to get into a group where we could talk about it and research it. And I found MUFON. That was, at that point in time, was a defunct chapter, because Elaine Douglas had been the state director, and she had passed away after a pretty gnarly falling out with MUFON. So I became a field investigator and then state director, and it was a great time. It was fun to learn, and I am still doing that and researching, but it's just, I've gone a little bit more underground, and I found some very incredible people that don't like to be out in the public eye, that they're helping me behind the scenes.
Wow. And so that was an interesting run, because you also got involved in the orange orbs part of it as well.
I did. And that was something to me as state director. I could look at not only the sightings that were coming into Utah, but, I was going through the MUFON database and seeing that a majority of the sightings coming in were these, lights in the sky cases. And a lot of state directors and field investigators were dismissing them. And, okay, great. So a lot of times people mistake things. But, to me, when you've got things that are behaving in specific ways, like moving against the wind, we know they're not Chinese lanterns. When they're hovering for upwards of an hour and they're in restricted airspace or, so on and so on, then that this isn't something that is mundane. This is anomalous, and it deserves to be looked at. But it was shocking to me how many people just kind of brush those cases aside. I found out about Hestalen in Norway. They've done 30 years of extensive research, I think the best research in the world. And I reached out to Erling Strand, who is the lead of Hestalen, and he has given me great advice. I really admire him, and I think that, I've found people like Dr. Massimo Teodorani, who has researched different hotspots in the world, like a site in Arizona, like Hestalen, a site in Italy, and has produced really good scientific research. And that's, to me, that was my goal, to try to open people's eyes, to get field investigators and the state directors to look at the fact that this is very anomalous, and we need to stop dismissing them, thinking that we're going to get some sort of, you know, golden nugget or the one nuts and bolts case. That's not what we're dealing with. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking at repeated patterns, and we need to analyze the data.
Now, when you started getting interested in this topic and you started getting involved and reinvigorated MUFON in your state and stuff like that, did you also catch any flack about that as well from friends or anything like that? Was there any difficulties as far as any of that goes?
You know, I mean, I am a business owner, and I've lived in Utah my whole life. And when I first started seeing these objects, you know, I was videotaping them, I was photographing them. And so I posted a couple of things on Facebook just to test the waters and, you know, got some mixed reactions, and I kind of pulled back a little bit. But as I learned more, I learned how to approach people with it. And I learned how to kind of intuitively sense when their eyes were glazing over and I should just be quiet. But I think if you present yourself in a logical, intelligent way, you can open people's eyes. You know, that's been a fun learning process too, just to try to figure out how to relay the information to people and make it palatable.
Yes, yes. It's funny. I had I do another show. I did one with Steve Callahan. He was out on a raft for 76 days, a lone survivor, and all these different things to survive. So that was a great. I was doing the show actually at his house last Sunday. We got all done, and he said to me, "Well, how did you get into, you know, doing this type of thing?" And I said, "Well, I do a real, you know, popular show on UFOs." And he goes, "Oh, really?" So he started telling me about his amazing sighting that I wish I caught on the show. It was a glowing. He was in, I think it was Hong Kong, and in a boat, and all these people saw it, and these three glowing discs went right over them, and in formation, and. But he was saying, you know, I'm not going to say they're alien. I just, you know, it was a pretty good, healthy, skeptic way to say it. He said, I just don't know what they were. He said, or if they could be explained in any type of way. So,
well, and I think that's a great point. I think that sometimes we take that leap, identifying them as extraterrestrial, when in reality, none of us truly know. And so perhaps we had to kind of tone that down a little bit and just say we have something anomalous and let's get out in the field and research that. And maybe that would make it, you know, again, more palatable for people.
Yes, yes. All right. I want to talk. We got plenty of time here, of course, but I do want to talk about the Skinwalker Ranch because I know you've been there. I've been reaching out to George Knapp ever since I read his book that he co-authored. And he is such a busy guy. Now, I know you were on Coast to Coast with him a while back. He said something to me, you know, at least he does communicate with me anyway, as busy as he is. But he says he's just, there's really nothing that he is able to announce now. That's how he put it. But I know there's new buyers, but I don't know what you know about that or not, but for the person who's not familiar with Skinwalker Ranch, let's talk about what an odd and unusual place that is. And how far is that from you?
You know, it's about 200 plus miles, and it's in the Uinta Basin, which is a beautiful place in Utah, and it is very rural. You have a lot of cattle ranchers, you have a lot of oil fields, and it is, you know, it's just got good, solid people that live there, and it is one of, the more I learn about different places in the world, the more I absolutely know that there is something in this place that is similar to other places in the world, but it seems to be more prevalent. I mean, you have a place not only at the Sherman Ranch or now Adamantium Ranch, because that is the new mystery owner, but you've got the whole periphery of that area where there have been repeated sightings decade after decade that have been documented by Junior Hicks, who is now 90 years old. He has been absolutely relentless in doing this, and he's been a great source of strength to the community.
And so do you know if, was it the Myers that owned that prior, way prior to the Shermans, right? I think that's...
Yes, and, yeah, 1905.
And they don't know when they abandoned the ranch. It was just abandoned. And I understand they should have known by all the locks on the doors that there was something going on there.
Yeah, it's unusual. But, you know, like I say, I think that people assume that Skinwalker Ranch or that 480-acre location is the only place that that's happening. But I have sources that live in Vernal and the outer areas, and it is the whole basin is a place that has cattle mutilations, strange creatures, UFO sightings, paranormal activity. So it's very unusual, and I think that people there are reticent to talk about it. But when you get them talking, there's some truly magnificent stories that they have to share.
Yes. Now there's a Native American reservation there or thereabouts, right? And they have
right. Yep. Yeah. The Ute reservation.
And they have stories as well. So I remember from the book that when the Shermans bought the place right off the bat, I think it was even the first day they had strange things happening, right?
You know, they did, and it you know, I mean, again, they're just good, down-to-earth people that wanted to try cattle ranching, and so they were there, and they began to experience kind of the poltergeist activity. Chris O'Brien was actually on the phone with Mr. Sherman when his wife saw, you know, the spheres that were kind of chasing the dogs, and that was the night when, or the day, when the dogs were reduced to a grease puddle, you know, and he could hear Mr. Sherman on the phone just screaming in a panic. And those dogs were very dear to him from what Chris said. And that was incredibly shocking. I mean, I can't imagine. I know about all of this, you know, and to me, I could be in that situation. I would still be shocked. But to not be even in that realm and to have something like that happen and repeatedly and to be terrorized, I can't imagine how that would be.
And, you know, besides the UFO sightings, which we can talk about a little bit, because they're kind of vague to me, but it seems to me that they did see one that looked like a craft, but mostly it was lights other than that. But besides that, they had so many really strange things happening, like a garden tool all of a sudden being up in the top of a tree when they walked away, and, you know, on and on and on. So, yeah, like poltergeist.
Right.
And right. I wouldn't have lasted in that house for a day. I would have been gone.
Oh, come on.
Well, maybe I would look for a UFO. But
where's your sense of adventure? It is disconcerting, and I can't imagine with some of the creatures or the, you know, the large animals that are being shot that don't go down. I mean, there is or the kind of the portals that would open up and to see strange creatures emerging. I mean, there's so many things that would leave you absolutely stunned. But I think at some point, Mr. Sherman, you know, he was almost, I think he just was determined to figure out what it was. And after he sold the property to Robert Bigelow, and he was still there kind of in an advisory capacity.
I know, he stayed on. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So we're having a little bit of an internet issue. I'm hoping that do you have anything going on your end, Erica? No? Okay.
No.
All right. It keeps cutting out on this side.
But,
all right. Well, we'll just continue on. If it gets really bad, I might have to have you shut your camera and see if that helps any. But Bigelow bought it and then tried to do a scientific review of this whole thing, which I think is quite amazing. I mean, that's a pretty bold step. And he tried to get as many like PhD type people there that would, you know, really take this thing seriously. And what an undertaking. But I understand there was a lot of boring times.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing with unexplained phenomena. I mean, you've got to sit around and you can never predict it. And so just when you get, you know, you're just resting on your laurels and thinking, okay, I'm going to go make a ham sandwich. I mean, that's when something happens. So it is a lot of sitting around and waiting. It's like going on a sky watch. And,
good point.
And, you know, I mean, you can't, it's not immediate gratification.
Right, right.
Let's put it that way. But when something happens, I think it takes you months to recover.
Yes, yes. Now, there is some, I neglected to tell you that we had some people send in a bunch of questions for us. So someone wanted to know if, did this phenomenon, whatever it was, appear to react and materialize to certain individuals more than others that lived on the ranch?
Oh boy, you know, that's a great question. And from my understanding, it happened to all of them. I think that that Mr. and Mrs. Sherman, probably there were more stories that were told, you know, instead of involving the rest of the family, for I would imagine, you know, because that's something you don't want to put your family out there and talk too much about their experiences. That's a great question.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder about, now I know there was, if I remember when I was reading the book, if I remember correctly, there was one of the science people there that was really upset because he kept missing things. You know, so that would be me.
Well, never say never. Maybe we just need to go on a little camping trip out there. I don't know. But, you know, I think that I'm sure it's frustrating, especially for a diehard scientist, you know, because you're used to doing things and having that repeatability and having that control over things. And so when you get into a situation where you don't have that and then you miss something, that would be incredibly frustrating.
So what were, going back to the Native Americans, what were some of the things that they would talk about? And like oral history, if there was oral history in that area, did you ever look into any of that?
You know, it's a really complex, interesting history. And I think you have the Utes and the Navajo, the history there. And apparently when the Utes and the Navajo, the Utes kind of drove out the Navajo, and the Navajo cursed the Ute Indians. And then you've got the Mormons coming in and trying to settle the area and trying to restrict the Ute Indians. I mean, you've got all of this really tumultuous activity in the basin, and then you've got the Gilsonite miners that were coming in because the Uinta Basin is really rich with minerals and rare earth. And so you've got all of this, and it was a pretty kind of a rough and tumble place. And Brigham Young, you know, way back when, really, you know, the Mormons came out to this area and decided that they really weren't necessarily interested in it. So they moved on, and they relegated this Ute reservation for the Ute Indians. But it's a lot of activity, and the Indians, the Ute Indians, will not go near Skinwalker Ranch because they believe it is cursed. Wow. And Skinwalkers are not necessarily, it's pretty heavy stuff, and it's very real.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely something going on here. You mentioned earlier the portal, that whole situation is the most amazing thing to me that happened there. And that actually happened in front of Bigelow's people.
And they're definitely some, you know, you hear some different conflicting stories with regard to that. I mean, I've heard the story that there was the portal that opened up and creatures emerged from the portal and there was gunfire exchanged.
Oh, I never heard that part.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard little bits and pieces about that, and I have nothing to back that up other than other people telling me that. But it's quite intriguing. So,
now, when you were involved in MUFON in the state, the state director, were you getting reports from that particular area, the basin?
You know, we did. And it was interesting because, oh gosh, about 3 years ago, I got a report from someone who I've since been researching, not only him, but his family. And he worked on the oil fields, the Arroyo oil fields. And he sent me a photo and he said that he would see these craft kind of hovering above the oil fields. And he said to me, he said, well, you know what, I've seen this for a long time, as have the other workers on the field, but we just, you know, it's something that, okay, there it is again. And then we don't really talk about it. And he said, but you know, you really need to talk to my grandmother, because a couple decades ago, she was out rock hounding with a family and she went missing. And she came back, they were panicked, came back a couple hours later, and when they found her, she was disoriented and had radiation burns.
Wow.
On her.
Really? Wow.
And so it was really fascinating. And so, of course, I'm like, okay, let's go. So I contacted his mother and said I wanted to come up there, and they're in Vernal, Utah. And I went up there with my cameraman, Matt Hepworth, and we did a 2-day interview with the grandmother, who's in her early 90s, and the mother. And it was very, in the interview, and I need to edit that and get that out there, but it was, you know, here's this good religious woman who talks about her experiences as a small child and having some health issues, having these beings come into her bedroom, having different experiences with UFOs. And then they also, to add to that, they knew the caretaker of the ranch, you know, back in the day. And they told me a story of having this ranch hand bring them the flesh or the meat of a mutilated cow. To eat, and they tried it. Oh no.
Wow.
And they said it didn't taste very good. Yeah, it was really interesting, but it was touching to hear her, you know, I mean, here she is 90 years old, and to talk about how profound, frightening, and beautiful these experiences were, and to also hear her talk about the fact that she couldn't really communicate. She wanted to talk to her parents, and she knew that they knew, but they didn't know how to deal with it. And her story, her daughter's story, and the grandson, I mean, this is not an isolated case. These are cases that happen, and they happen in the Uinta Basin frequently. And I believe that a lot of these people are truly looking for answers, and it's pretty staggering.
Right, right. I wonder if anyone has mutilated cow on the menu out there in any restaurants.
No, I don't think so. I hear it doesn't taste very good. I can't even imagine the health effects of that. But
yeah.
That was just when they shared that story. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that one's going to make
not
it.
My
don't
first
edit
choice.
That. That one out.
Yeah, well.
Another question is, speaking of cattle mutilations, do you have a theory why there have been cattle mutilations at the ranch, but no attempt to physically harm the people that were living there?
Oh boy, that's the million-dollar question, and I think that's the question anywhere in the world where there are animal mutilations. I mean, we don't know. There's some researchers that believe that there are human mutilations. You know, that's a road that I don't go down, because my research is a little bit different than that. But I definitely think that the cattle mutilations are very interesting in the basin, and that is something that has affected people. It has affected their livelihood, and it's a very real concern, and it's something that the Utah State Vet has known about for decades.
Yeah, in the book, it's not just, you know, the regular old, if there is such a thing, cattle mutilations. But there was one of the cows that it only could have been dropped somehow. Its head was straight down into a hole and then fallen over and mutilated, you know, on site right there. Really strange. And that one was probably the strangest mutilation that happened on the site. But I think that they actually, these things were like almost happening under their noses when the original family was there.
Right. Yeah. And I think that that's still the case. I mean, a cattle rancher can go out there and, you know, turn their back, and 10 minutes later, they've got one of their prized possessions has been mutilated. So it's very disconcerting for all of them. And again, you know, who do you turn to? You know, you can call the authorities and they can come take the police report. And at the end of the day, what does that do? I know that a lot of cattle ranchers now aren't reporting that because the insurance gets involved, and the insurance won't pay for the loss of the animal. Yeah.
And they're always coming back with the you know, predators, like a wolf or something like that. Now there's actually right. No wolves supposed to be out that way, first of all, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think so. I remember reading something about that. They're not indigenous to that area.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's perplexing. And, you know, I have a contact that is a third generation cattle rancher out near Skinwalker Ranch. And he remembers having his pet pony mutilated at a young age. And, you know, having, I mean, the Utah State vet out there looking at what had happened, and not a lot of answers. And I think that it would be really good if at some point the Utah State vet and crew would actually be willing to work with other researchers to try to figure this out. You know, I know myself, I've reached out to the Utah State vet and have had not a lot of love in that regard. So, I mean, he's been cordial, but...
Yeah. Well, I imagine that there could be a lot of friction involved in something like that, because when it's kind of like the same as far as any of this stuff really goes, when there's no easy explanation for it, then it causes a little bit of friction when someone is in more of the mainstream idea of the whole situation.
Right. And I mean, I understand too, you know, we've got people that are in this field that kind of swoop in and will go in and run a story and then leave with regard to that, and not give the people in the area a lot of help or support. And to me, I think that's critical. I am not a journalist. You know, I'm a researcher, and I feel like it's my duty to be a support system for people that are going through this, not just come in and get my story and run away. So I think that, you know, there's some things that we need to do to give people comfort and to try to make a cohesive unit with all these different branches.
Right, right. Someone in the chat room wanted to know if there was anyone ever reported this to animal cruelty, but that would only be pointing fingers at people as the culprit in that case.
Right.
I don't think that they would get involved with that part unless they actually had more of an explanation. But another question that I had seen earlier was someone wanted to know, basically, if you knew what all the different anomalous phenomena was going on there, you know.
Oh, boy. I mean, everything that you can think about is going on there. You've got the anomalous light phenomena. You have the poltergeist activity. You've got the strange creatures. You have the skinwalkers, the shapeshifters. You have, just really off-the-wall things. You've got reports of scoop marks in the soil where soil has been extracted and then neatly placed to the side. You have reports of underground machinery, of the sounds of underground machinery. So, or vortexes. I mean, it's you name it, it's happening there. And it really is. I think that Hunt for the Skinwalker was a very good representation of the kind of bizarre phenomenon that is taking place there repeatedly.
Wow. Now, someone did ask a question about a vortex, and they mentioned, let me just see if I can find that here. The Uinta Basin is next to Wasatch Mountains. Do you think the machinery sounds that people report hearing in the basin could be related to existence of secret U.S. Navy? Why Navy? I don't know why Navy. Installation. Oh, that Dr. Michael Sala claims is located in a huge underground caverns in those mountains. Do you know anything about Michael Sala or anything?
You know, little bit. Again, it's not my forte, but I do, you know, I have heard about the Navy. I've heard that tossed about with regard to Skinwalker Ranch and some of the experiments and things when Bigelow was there. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's so hard for me to speculate on things like that, because until I've got kind of the facts about things, I could give my opinion, but I don't know what good that would do. I think the underground machinery is very strange, but I think it's not just taking place in this area. You know, you've got reports of that all over the world in specific hotspots.
Oh, how about that? Now, you mentioned earlier that there's a lot of minerals in the area, and a lot of times that seems to be the case with flap areas. You know, there's something going on there, like a high copper content or high this or high that. Has anyone ever reported any electromagnetic type of phenomena that you're aware of?
You know, there are some anomalies right over Skinwalker Ranch, and I think that whole area, there also is a fault line that runs through Skinwalker Ranch. And so you've got a lot of different things that are taking place. And then you've got the different mineral and rare earth content in that area. You've got granite and quartz, and you've also got, and I'm just trying to think, and I'm totally, you know, having a mind cramp. It'll come to me later. But I mean, you've got unique mineral content in the area. And I think, to me, when I've done my research here in not only in Utah, but when I'm looking at these different areas where you see recurrent phenomena, you've got definitely some key factors that are taking place. You've got some commonalities. So you've got specific, like the copper, you've got specific mineral content, you have a military installation that's located close by, you have a sacred site, or, you know, say in the United States, you've got the Native American reservations. In Australia, you have the Aborigines, you've got different cultures that view certain sites as very sacred. And so I think it's intriguing. You also have, you know, bodies of water. So why are these, you know, why is this happening in specific places? I think that we need to look at the commonalities. We need to kind of reframe the way we're researching, especially here in the United States, and kind of move forward instead of waiting for that one golden nugget.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about what you have discussed in the past with Erling Strand as well, because I think that's a very interesting area. But someone wanted to know, are there any nuts and bolts type of UFO sightings that you're aware of? And I know in the book it mentioned one. I just, you know, I read the book in 2013, I think it was, or 14. I can't really remember it.
You know, I mean, there were, and I think, you know, we've got to define what nuts and bolts is, really. I mean, this is another million dollar question, but it's like, was it the solid craft? I mean, there was a kind of a refrigerator type object that they saw hovering above ground level. You know, they saw
right,
that.
Or they thought it was an RV at first, right? Yeah,
right,
I remember that.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that's what they're referring to, but I think that, you know, don't get me started on the nuts and bolts, because I could go into Chinese lanterns too, and then you'd have trouble.
Yeah. So what about the temperature drop? Someone wanted to know, you know anything about that? Any temperature drops with sightings?
You know, it's like the paranormal sightings. I mean, when you've got something that is taking place in close proximity, a lot of people will report there's a drastic decrease in temperature. And so that's a curious thing to me. I know I had a sighting that was very peculiar, a personal sighting. And when I had that, and that was probably about 20 feet away from me, I'd noticed that the temperature dropped drastically in the area, and that was my personal experience there. But this is something that's pretty common with paranormal phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah. When were you were actually, did you actually get to go on the ranch itself or just outside the area?
No, I was just outside the area. And I was doing some research and interviews. But, you know, I keep hoping that I'll get to go on the ranch, but we'll see.
Yes.
With the new security and everything, we're not quite sure, but
yeah, armed guards.
We'll see
there.
What happens.
Yeah. All came about because just people were going in there and they were breaking in. It used to have just a regular road gate, which if they're watching live on YouTube, it's behind me, and the green screen is the road gate there. And now it's all like jersey barriers and, you know, a guardhouse and all that to keep people out of there. And that's almost overkill. I mean, it must cost a fortune to keep people out of there.
You know, I'm sure, and I understand why they would want to do that. I mean, there are several reasons. First of all, you've got liability. You know, you've got someone coming onto private property, and you've got strange things taking place, and people that go on there with no regard to the private property. You know, they could injure themselves, and then you've got the liability issue. But I mean, it's just that people that go up there are typically not the most respectful.
That's a shame.
And I think that that's unfortunate. You know, people are trying to, I heard reports of people trying to take pieces of the fence or the gate and different things. And I mean, it's just, you know, if you're, that's not okay to do.
Plus, wasn't there a movie called Skinwalker Ranch kind of came out? So if that happened, then it's part of pop culture. And of course, people are going to start stealing things. Do you know the name of the family or a corporation or whatever it is that bought it now?
So it is owned by Admantium Holdings.
Ah, mm-hmm.
And no one really knows who is behind that. There's speculation that Robert Bigelow is still involved in some regard. I don't know. I think that's something that all of us who research the area have been trying to figure out. You know, who is this mystery company person, and what are they doing? It does sound like, from what George Knapp said, that whoever they are, they appear to be really putting some good money into researching, and hopefully those results, the data will be shared with the public, which is something that didn't happen when NIDS was involved, when Bigelow was involved.
Right. Yeah, someone just put on the message board, it's too bad that they announced the location in the first place. It really is. You know, I mean, that's, I'm sure someone would have figured it out eventually. But still, it's not an anonymous place. You can find it without too much trouble.
Right. Yeah, yes, you can.
Yeah.
But, and it's kind of like the Marley Woods. I mean, you've got these places that we try to keep, well, we weren't even trying to keep Skinwalker Ranch secret, but, you know, you've got the location and, hey, everybody go here and.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. That's why you need security guards.
Right. Do you happen to know if the military ever had any interest in this? Did anyone ever talk about that?
You know, there has been some speculation. I mean, I've heard that the CIA, I've heard all sorts of different people involved. And so I don't really know for sure. But, you know, you can look on, I know Ryan Skinner's done some pretty good research, and he has skinwalkerranch.org. You can look on there, and he'll put the timeline out there, and you can look at that and some of his beliefs on who was involved with the military. But I have heard, and I still get reports that there are people there in black suburbans. There are very unusual. There's unusual activity. The black helicopter activity.
How about men in black? Someone wanted to know. Has that?
You know, it's Ryan Burns, who lives and now he's in kind of Vegas half the time, but he has a ranch that again is close to Skinwalker Ranch, and he's got, I think it's video or photographic evidence of people coming onto his property, and two men dressed in suits with strange pieces of equipment doing something out there. So they're definitely, I mean, if you call that a man in black, that would be a good one for me.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Now, do you know if anyone has ever tried to track down any Myers family members? I know that they were there only in the late 1930s, but, you know, you wonder if any family lore ever went on about what happened. It would be really interesting to know, in other words, if things were going on back in, you know, prior to in the 1930s or so.
From my understanding, there have been people that have reached out to the family, and there was nothing that they wanted to share, or, you know, they didn't think that there was activity taking place there, but
yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, there's so much research to be done. So we just hope that, you know, maybe the new owners will open that up for researchers.
Right, right. Now let's talk about other places. You know, getting back to Erling Strand, you spoke with him about what's going on there. Now, he actually thinks it's not a natural phenomena, which a lot of people are speculating that it's some type of natural, like plasma creation or something like that. So what do you know about that, Hespeland?
You know, Hespeland, Norway is its sleepy little, you know, town in Norway. And back in the, oh my gosh, was it the late 80s, they had, you know, the town was up in arms because they were seeing these objects over, I mean, a close proximity. And they reached out, they talked to the press, and then the word got out, and the town was kind of besieged by different members of the press who are always so kind, you know, to people that have sightings, as we know. But Erling Strand and Leif Havik and some other people from Oxford University found out about that, and they went there and did a 2-week study, from my recollection, and found that there were some truly anomalous things taking place there. And so they acquired funding and then ended up staying there for 30 years. They have the world's only place, an actual dedicated building, a UFO observatory, where they collect data and they share that with different universities. They have a science camp where they will take the students from the university out there and teach them how to scientifically investigate anomalous phenomena. And there's a really great video available on YouTube about Hestalen and some of the different sightings. And you can see there's a clip where the kids in science camp are out there and they're experiencing, they're seeing things, and they're collecting the data and video. It's incredible. And you can just hear the joy in their voices. Yeah. I mean, they're screaming. It's incredible. But, you know, they have done such a good job, and they've been very cognizant of the fact that they've had to kind of tone down the way they approach this subject. So it's been, you know, there's never been a mention of UFO. Mm. It has been, let's collect the data, you know, let's see what we get, and then we will say, you know, this is anomalous light phenomena. And then just recently, I mean, they've identified that there are 4 different types of light phenomena that behave intelligently.
Wow.
And that's saying something. So you've got really credible research here, and you've got a group of people like Erling Strand, who is very willing to share this information and teach people how to get out there and collect data for themselves. And that's important.
Yes. All right. That's it for the free part of the show. And if you'd like to listen to the whole shows, plus the Everything Else Show as a podcast. All you have to do is support us for $2 or more a month. You can get that information on podcastufo.com. As I mentioned in the beginning of the show, next week's guest is Justin Barber. He is the Phoenix Forgotten film director, and we'll be taking calls at the end of that show as well. All right, so thanks so much, and keep your eyes to the sky.